The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. Are you ready? Do you have your doodly-doodly-doodlies ready?
I do.
Because tonight, part two of our clip show, we're going to be hearing some more sounds that we recorded on various on-site episodes.
And by we, you mean you and other people, not me.
Yes, the general Strange Familiars we.
The royal we.
We're also going to be talking to Jonathan, who has a really interesting story about he went to this place where this guy had some Bigfoot activity.
Mm-hmm.
And he heard some wood knocks, but more interesting than that, he heard these vocals, but they kind of sounded like a buzzing kind of sound, which we talk about in Where the Footprints End. He was very interested. He read the book and then he contacted us because he's like, oh, I've heard that. A very, very interesting story. We're also going to be talking with Kelly, who has a story of a blue light she saw in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. Before we get into all that, though,
yeah,
I have some announcements to make. Chad and I will be in person in Morgantown, West Virginia at Cryptid Bash this coming Saturday, August 7th. It's 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Morgantown Art Party. That's 218 Walnut Street in Morgantown. It's a big event. Other podcasts are there. Other artists are there. Chad and I will be there. I think Chad's bringing the knife that he got taken and then apported back to him, possibly, at Harry Springs. I think he's bringing the skull he found at Pandemonium. I may or may not bring some other skulls we found at different places, but I will have all my books there. I will have art and art prints there. And if I have time, I will be taking commissions to do cryptid sketches, little cryptid drawings for people.
While you wait.
Yes. Limited number. I can't do them constantly, but I'll take a limited number. So if you want an original commissioned cryptid drawing, I may have time to do them while we're there. We'll see.
And I can't cross state lines, so I can't go along. No, I'm just kidding. I totally could. I just choose not to.
Because of my health concerns, I'm a little bit worried about big crowds of people. This will be my first event I've done post-COVID. Yeah. I'm going to be wearing a mask. I'm probably going to be 6 foot distancing, at least inside. Probably won't be shaking hands.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
If you want a picture with us, maybe outside, but inside we'll be kind of keeping our distance, I think, and playing it safe.
Yeah.
I know at this point it seems like nobody knows what to do, and I think that's really the truth. I don't think anybody really knows what to do, so.
But you, of all people, need to be a little bit on the safer side.
So I'm going to try to play it safe.
So everybody be nice to Tim. I mean, I'm actually winning at the social distancing because I'll be, you know,
a lot more distant,
several hundred miles away.
Yes. So that's Cryptid Bash this coming Saturday, August 7th, at Morgantown Art Party. Hope to see you there. Get signed books, get art prints, get original art from me, and you can meet Chad and I as well from 6 feet away.
Chad might even move up to 5.5 feet.
Hey, that's Chad's
decision. That's a Chad issue.
Speaking of art prints, added 2 new 9x12 prints on Etsy. These are both selections from the Monsters Under the Hospital Bed. It's the Bigfoot, Big Heart one that everyone seems to love, so that was kind of a no-brainer. That's one of the prints, and then the Black Dog illustration, which is probably my favorite from that series, I made into a print as well. These are both in our Etsy shop. Of course, if you come to Cryptid Bash, I'll have them there. But if you're not coming to Cryptid Bash, you can find these prints in our Etsy shop. They are on 140-pound watercolor paper. Not to pat myself on the back, but they look great.
They do. They look nice on that.
We have a printer that's amazing. That's our print.
Let's give a shout out to Wise Printing.
Wise Printing, York, Pennsylvania. Fantastic. Fantastic printers. They do all of my art prints, and I could not be happier with them. While you're on Etsy checking out those 2 prints, you can check out all of our other stuff at Etsy. All of my books are there. Have some original artwork up there. Strange Familiars t-shirts. You added some photos, right?
Yeah, I'm in the process of adding quite a bit more, so.
Yeah, so we have a lot of old photos up there, besides the photo of the week, which we still have up there, and we'll have a new Curiosity of the Week coming later on in the episode. Our Etsy shop name is Lost Grave, but if you type in Strange Familiars, our stuff should come up. And another announcement. From August 4th through the 8th, everything in our TeePublic store is on sale. Store-wide sale.
That's Wednesday through Sunday.
Yes. T-shirts, totes, mugs, banners, everything they make at TeePublic, everything will be on sale.
It's Leo season.
Is that why?
Yeah, it's Leo season.
They're celebrating your birthday with the sale at TeePublic. Mm-hmm.
That was nice of them.
Yes. The link to our TeePublic shop is in the show notes. Click that. Go ahead and check it out. Everything's on sale starting Wednesday, August 4th. You've delayed things long enough, Allison.
I know. All these announcements. What's the lunch today? What's lunch B?
Do they still have lunch A and B?
I don't think so. I think it's just what microwavable bag of crap do you want?
Yeah. Let's get to more of our Ghosts of Audio Past. We're continuing our exploration of sounds we recorded during various on-site episodes. Like I mentioned previously, some of these may be explainable, perfectly natural sounds. Others may be genuinely anomalous. I believe some are. I believe all of them were captured during anomalous events. That is, you know, weird stuff was happening. And whether the sounds are naturally explainable or not, that's another thing. As in our last episode, I'll play most of these clips 3 to 4 times so you can hear what we're trying to point out. So to start, mm-hmm. Let's go to one of my favorite places in York County, Toad Road.
Don't look behind you.
This audio comes from episodes 159 and 160, which we called Synchronicity Storm on Toad Road. If you're not familiar with Toad Road, there's a ton of legends about the place.
There's a lot of false information about that place.
There's a lot of false information about the place. I wrote 2 books addressing this. Beyond the Seventh Gate was my first book, and then Don't Look Behind You was a follow-up. Do we need to go over the legends? I guess we can quickly go over the legends of Toad Road. So the one that people talk about as if it's true and as if it's been around forever is this legend of a burning insane asylum. People still tell me this legend.
They've been to the insane asylum.
No one has told me to my face they've been to the insane asylum. I've heard people on podcasts claim they've gone through the Fifth Gate and they've seen the ruins of the insane asylum. Mm-hmm.
Much like most of life, reality versus your imagination is far weirder, but more mundane.
I don't know where these people are that they're seeing ruins. I've hiked the entirety of Toad Road. I'm guessing more times than anyone else alive has, probably, at this point, honestly.
At least recently.
It's been closed a long time, and there's a certain way to get into it that Gideon actually found it, and he knows it, and I know it, and now I believe Chad knows it, And I think I showed Soraya when he was here, but I don't think he could find it again if he had to. So unless you know that way, I don't think you're walking the entire road. There are ruins along the road. There's ruins of an old flint mill along the road.
There are several houses that we've seen on older maps that aren't there now, but nothing in the way.
Yeah, there was like a hunting cabin that was there. And then Dr. Belknap's house on the other end was there and was a ruin for a while, but it's not there anymore. So the story of the insane asylum that burnt down, complete urban legend with a very small hint of truth that made it stick. Go all the way back to episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Strange Familiars to get into this with more detail, but
there was a quote-unquote asylum of sorts, more of like a self-care, mental and physical health.
Yes. By the time it burnt down, it was basically an old age home at that point.
Yeah, it's what became the area in York County where the county home is.
Right.
Which was previously the almshouse.
Right. For that part of the county.
For that part of the county, yeah.
It was Dr.
Crandall's.
Dr. Crandall's.
Health school.
Health school, and then it was Dr. Crandall's, like, fresh air sanatorium or something like that. So it was a sanatorium. So people think, oh, it was a sanatorium. It had to be a mental hospital. No. Sanatorium was used for any place of medical rest back in the day. And this burnt down in the 50s, I think?
Yeah, because there are people that still talk about it, and that is actually located kind of across the street from where you sell your books at American Daydream.
Yeah. So that did burn down. It's kind of near Toad Road.
Yeah.
But no one got hurt. It was not an insane asylum. There was not a mad doctor
keeping private people in his
Basement doing experiments on them.
Yeah, and then there wasn't a time when escaped, quote-unquote, mental patients were running through the woods.
Yeah, like none of this happened. And it's really sad because Dr. Belknap did live at the end of Toad Road, and he gets bound up into these stories, either as the quote-unquote mad doctor, because he happened to be a doctor and he happened to live at the end there, or somebody in the local paper one time printed this story that it was called Toad Road because he had toad statuary everywhere, and he collected toads, and he was a big fan of toads. I found photos of his house.
No toads.
No toads, no toad statuary, nothing around there. His house was right at the end. It was the American Legion Lodge that was actually owned by the Shoe Wizard.
Oh, yeah. We have to do a story about
the Shoe House.
I finally, after decades and decades of living here, got to go to the Shoe Wizard House, which is a gigantic
shoe house.
It's one of the Roadside America attractions that you'd see on the old Lincoln Highway that goes through York.
So Haynes, the guy who built the shoe house, he owned this lodge at the end there, and he gave it to the American Legion, so they called it Haynes Lodge or Haynes American Legion Lodge. There's also a wizard ranch in Helm, and I always wonder, why is that wizard ranch?
Well, it's he was the shoe wizard.
He was the shoe wizard, and so he...
They even have stained glass in that, in the shoe house, of him holding a shoe.
Yeah.
It's the coolest place.
So in any case, that became Dr. Belknap's house. It was in disrepair. He fixed it up, made a beautiful stone house out of it. I don't know whatever happened to his house. I don't think it burnt down. I don't think it would burn. I think they must have torn it down for one reason or another. That was at the end. It's really sad because Dr. Belknap gets bound up into these stories as this mad doctor. And I often say he might have been angry because even back then, people came to this area to do legend tripping and stuff. And he probably had a bunch of kids on his property.
Yeah.
Probably didn't want them there. So he might have been an angry doctor, but he wasn't mad. He wasn't insane. He wasn't practicing on people.
This is the thing I think is funny about this whole story. It's like, this is back in the day when, if you look at old newspapers, like, if your chicken had a bad day, it might make the news.
Right.
Don't you think a burning mental institution with runaway patients on the loose might have made the papers?
And they did, from as far away as Canada. They are in the papers, in the York papers, you know, so it's big news. So if one was in York and burnt down, it would be front page news in York. And it did not happen. There was not an insane asylum out there. To set the record straight one more time, there's never been
a dedicated mental health facility in our county.
Exactly. There's never been an insane asylum in York County to burn down. There just wasn't. One out there.
The sad reality of that is that we've never made it a priority enough to have a dedicated mental health institution.
All of that said, there is strange stuff that happens around Toad Road well before these legends ever came about, and still to this day. So once a year, I try to hike the entire road end to end. It's kind of like my yearly ritual. Sometimes I do it more than once, but I try to do it for sure once a year. In 2020, right before the pandemic hit, Chad came with me on my annual Toad Road hike. So this day was filled with all kinds of synchronicities and weirdness. The most striking was we had been kind of alerted to these Mylar balloon things. We started finding them in Pandemonium. We published the Pandemonium episode where we found the Mylar balloon, and I started talking about it. I had seen it on some YouTube video of a Bigfoot guy was talking about finding Mylar balloons in his Bigfoot area. Mm-hmm. So when we came across this Mylar balloon in Pandemonium, I was just kind of like, let's just make note of it. Let's take a photograph of it. It's an interesting thing. Published that before Hellier 2 came out. Mm-hmm. Now, I did the soundtrack for the final episode of Hellier 2, but that's all the involvement I had. I didn't know the plot line. I didn't know what they were doing. Greg contacted me and said, hey, can we use your album as the soundtrack to the last episode? I said, absolutely. I love Hellier and very nice people. Go ahead and use it. But I had no idea what they were up to. Mm-hmm. In that season, they started finding Mylar balloons on their investigations too. And it became this very big thing where they started finding Mylar balloons. Mm-hmm. So now Mylar balloons kind of became a thing. And we started kind of noting them more often. When Chad and I were on Toad Road that day, found a Mylar balloon. Mm-hmm. And we had to go off the main trail. It was wet. I think it was a big muddy area that we just couldn't hike through. So we had to go off the main trail, pop up kind of on this berm. As soon as we get up there, take about maybe 10 steps or less. Mm-hmm. I was like, look at that, a Mylar balloon. 3 steps later, I see a skull. And I'm looking at it. Before I even pick it up, I'm like, that's a weird skull. Pick it up. It's a pig skull. Not only that, it's a pig skull with a small caliber bullet hole in it. Now, this means nothing to anyone except me, because in my research for Beyond the Seventh Gate, and I didn't even put this article, I don't think I put this article in the book. I just came across this article and kind of made note of it. There's a story about someone near Cador's Furnace / Toad Road. It's, you know, same general area. A young man who was butchering pigs had a .22 caliber pistol, fell out of his pocket, went off and shot him in the heart or above the heart. I'm not saying this is the pig skull from that that event, but I'm saying when I find this pig skull with a small caliber bullet hole in it, I remember this story, and I think it's from like 1909 this happened. I remember this story, and I'm thinking, what the heck? There are not pig farms around this area.
No.
This is in the middle of Toad Road. It's right where the Trout Run Creek. It's right by the Trout Run Creek. Right where that comes out and meets the Cadoras.
This is all like wooded area.
Not pig farms there. There are not wild pigs there. There just aren't. We've had a wild pig, I think, in York County, but it was like an escape thing. Somebody brought it in to hunt. We don't generally have wild pigs here. Really, really weird to find a pig skull at all out there that it would have a small caliber bullet hole in it. It just knocked me on my butt, honestly. It blew me away. As I'm like, this is a pig skull with a .22 caliber bullet hole in it. I know this story of this kid who was slaughtering pigs out there. Stunning. Really, really stunning. We continue our walk. We go up to the end, turn around, and come back. When we come back, maybe 10 yards beyond where we found the one pig skull, Chad steps off the trail, for what reason I don't remember, and says, look at this, and picks up another pig skull. I don't know. You know, it's very, very strange, very wonderful and exciting day for me to find that. So the creepiest sound we captured all day there was this EVP, what it's saying, I'm not sure. People have guessed, like, not that way or back that way or something like that.
Wouldn't it have been cool if it just said, don't look behind you?
That would have been
like a good full circle moment.
It would have been perfect.
They never tell you exactly what you want to hear.
So let's go ahead and play this EVP. Back that way. All right, the next thing we captured was a knock and reply. We were hearing stuff kind of on the hill above us that day. And I think Chad kept saying he was hearing knocks. And I mean, I heard him too, but I think he heard more than I did. So we did capture what sounds like a knock and a reply. Okay, remember last episode when you talked about EVPs and stomach growls?
Yeah.
There were sounds in this episode, the original episode. Mm-hmm. I played it. You can go back and listen. And I was like, this is a weird groan that we captured. This is a weird growl. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, it sounds like maybe it could be your stomach. But no, I've captured stomach growls on other investigations when I've had the recorder in my pocket here.
Yeah, yeah.
This day, the recorder was on my walking stick, so it's way up here. So I thought, I don't really think those were stomach growls. Mm-hmm. I went back and listened to them compared to other recordings that I had that were definitely stomach growls. They were stomach growls. Mm-hmm. So I forget who wrote in to tell me that you were correct. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, give it a while. And sometimes these things seem a little more mundane. And I think these definitely were just stomach growls. So I won't be playing any of those that I captured. But if you want to hear my stomach growls, you can go back and listen to the Synchronicity on Toad Road episodes.
You tend not to eat before trips.
All right, so now we're going to episodes 169 and 170. I called this the Forgotten River Bigfoot Investigation. This is from October 2019. It's just before I went to the first Strange Realities conference. I was called by a Bigfoot witness. He had some experiences along the Susquehanna River in York County. Chad and I went out there one evening in October. We started hiking into this area. We hiked 2 to 3 miles into the woods just to see what we could see. The guy told me around where he was having experiences. He was camping out there fishing. And I forget if he had something thrown at him or he got yelled at. I forget the experience. He didn't see a creature, but he felt it was Bigfoot-like. So we found the area where he was camping, probably. We looked around. And then we just hiked past that on into the woods. And we got really deep in there into this like creek valley. It was absolutely beautiful, stunningly beautiful creek valley. As we're entering this creek valley, we heard the sound of a car door slamming. I had the recorder on. I had heard this sound before, not just a car door slamming. I mean, like an anomalous car door slamming. I was on Toad Road the year before with someone else doing my annual hike. And we were walking not far from where Chad and I found that pig skull. Mm-hmm. And I heard a car door slam that sounded like it was right in my right ear, to the point where I looked around and I started wondering, like, who's got a four-wheel drive and drove down in here? You know, where did this sound come from? Could not figure it out. Didn't have a recorder with me that day, or at least I didn't have it running, so I didn't capture it that day. On this day of the Forgotten River Bigfoot investigation, there are no cars anywhere near us. No boats on the river beside us. There's no roads anywhere near us, and no parking area. In fact, a guy came down. He was a hunter. He was not presently hunting. I think he was kind of scouting out the area. And he came down past us, and we asked him. We said, where's the closest parking area or road? And he's like, oh, like way up there. Yeah, I forget how far away it was. Like too far away to hear a car door slam, especially through the trees. So John Keel noted the two most frequently reported sounds during paranormal incidents are babies crying and car door slamming. I think Ron Moorhead said they heard a car door slamming sound when they were at the Sierra camp. They were like 10 miles from anywhere up there in the Sierra Nevada.
What did people hear before cars?
Maybe they would just
describe. Did they hear horses?
They got a saddle. They hear a saddle being put on. I don't know. Maybe it was the same thing, but they would just describe it as a bang or a hollow thud or something. You know,
someone loading things in the back of a wagon.
Yeah, who knows? I heard a baby crying one time when we went to a certain place in Gettysburg, which we will be talking about with much more detail.
Very soon.
Very soon. This was on a cold November night. Got out of the car, didn't have the recorder running because literally as soon as we got out of the car, we heard a baby crying. Didn't see anyone around.
Who would bring their baby out in the cold?
Well, that's my question because it was for, I don't know, a little while too, we heard this.
Are you sure it wasn't like some sort of animal, like a fox or something?
It sounded like a baby crying. And It could have been somebody. Could have been somebody around. Maybe somebody had their baby out there. You know, but I don't know.
It seems unlikely.
The strange thing about the Forgotten River Bigfoot thing, and maybe it's because we recorded literally the night before I went to Strange Realities. I remember on the way out of the woods, it got dark on us. We hiked in, it was still light, and it got dark on us quickly. And we're coming out of there. I tripped on a root and hurt my knee really bad. Like, really, really hurt myself right before I went down to Tennessee. Maybe I willfully forgot about it because of that reason. It was months and months and months this just sat in my file, and I never listened to the audio. And then one day I was kind of looking through, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. I heard the car door sound that
night.
See
if I got it kind of
thing. Yeah, I wonder if I caught it. So I don't know if anyone... I know other people have heard the anomalous car door sound. I don't know if it's ever been recorded.
Mm-hmm.
We got it. And as far as I know, this might be the only time anyone's actually recorded the anomalous car door sound in the woods or, you know, on a paranormal investigation. So we'll go ahead and play it again.
Future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
All right, so now we move to episodes 174 and 175, Through the Haunted Forest, parts 1 and 2. This is our series to do with Michaux Forest, sometimes covering our own experiences, sometimes when we meet witnesses there. We met Ken in the area. He took us to a couple places where he had Bigfoot encounters. The second location was our first time we went to Harry Springs, with Ken took us there. And that's an area which we return to with some frequency. While we were at Harry Spring, we captured several pieces of audio. We heard a kind of screech. This may have been a bird. I'm not sure. And then we heard a kind of babbling chatter. You can hear it in this clip, like, it's kind of beyond the insect noises.
You have to kind of tune out the insects.
Yeah, you can listen through them.
What time of year was that?
Oh, now you're really trying me.
Well, just do a vague season. Was it summertime?
No, I don't think so. I think it might have been spring. Might have been fall, early fall. I forget. I honestly forget. I'm sure on the episode we say I should have made note of that. We've been to Harry Springs so many times, all times of year.
Yeah, they just kind of blur together.
Yeah, it starts to blur together for me. All right, so next, episodes 189 and 190. That's Through the Haunted Forest 3 and 4. So Chad and I returned to Harry Springs, and we made our way up to Big Pond Furnace. While we were at Harry Springs, we often heard what we term gorilla grunts, and Ken heard these too. I remember I really need to probably go through the audio we recorded with Ken with a fine-tooth comb, because we were really hearing them that night, and I've not been able to pull any of them out.
Is that also kind of that sound, you know, like if you get too close to a deer and they make that like sort of nasal, like it sounds like they're blowing out of their nose?
I mean, it could have been. Ken's a hunter and, you know, he didn't think that's what they were.
Plus, they don't tend to get that close in the dark unless it's sort of accidental, right?
Yeah, these were down in towards the creek that's there. I went through the audio like again and again trying to find these sounds on all of our recordings. I only found this one, like, short clip of this kind of grunting sound, so I'll go ahead and play that. So, on the way up to Big Pond Furnace, this was one of those things, Chad's driving, I'm just kind of lazily looking out the window, you know, seeing what I can see. I saw what seemed to be something, like, I thought it was a person, squatting down by a tree along the side of the road. To the point where I said, Chad, you got to back up. We got to look back here. Back up. Of course, we back up. Nothing there. So did I see anything at all? I don't know. It was enough to make me back take pause and tell Chad to back up. We get to Big Pond Furnace, which is an old iron furnace, not far from Harry Springs. We got out and Chad goes right to the furnace because he wants to check out the furnace. And I start walking down the road. I didn't get very far. I don't know, maybe 20 yards before there's this huge crash. And it sounded like somebody took a tree, a living tree, that's like 6 or 7 inches in diameter, and just snapped it in half. It was so loud, and it scared me so much. I mean, it just backed me right up. Terrifying, like, because it's pitch dark.
Oh, you're in the dark.
Oh, yeah, it's just pitch dark. I'm headed down this road. It's probably midnight or after at this point. And just this crack, and you just hear a crash after that. It's completely unimpressive on the recording.
You were recording.
I was recording.
And it sounds like it's like someone taking a toothpick. And
if that. I mean, you can barely hear it at all. It's so disappointing because this one I was so excited for because I thought, like, this is going to be so impressive because it was so scary. I think I even let out an expletive when it happened because it scared the heck out of me. In this clip, when I play it, you'll hear me talk about car sounds. Now, I'm not saying that this was a car that made this sound, nor am I saying it's the anomalous car door slam sound again. What I'm talking about is we were down in Harry Springs before and we thought we heard a car. It was like some kind of loud sound or something. And I say to Chad, well, there's our car sound, meaning maybe that's what we heard in Harry Springs and we thought was a car. Maybe we were hearing whatever that was. So that's what I'm talking about. I don't think a car made this sound. It was definitely somebody, something snapping a tree or a tree snapping on its own.
Whoa! All right.
That was our car sound.
That wasn't a car. That was.
I know, but I mean that's what we heard before. That was something big.
So now we're up to recent times, and just because I'm a completist, just going to go ahead and present these, even though it was a few episodes ago. So not long ago, we went to an area in Maryland that we call Gazoo's Woods. It's a nature preserve. There was a pretty intense Bigfoot encounter that's on the BFRO page there. That's why I originally went there. We had some little strangenesses there concerning stuffed animals and so forth. I encourage everyone to go ahead and listen to episodes 242 and 243, Gazoo's Woods Part 1 and 2, for the full story. So we get out of the car that night. This was our first nighttime visit. Things got weird immediately. And of course, owls came in.
Thank you.
while we were there, Chad also kept talking about hearing a kind of musical sound. He kept saying, I keep hearing something go doot, 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 doot. And I didn't hear this. I didn't know what he was talking about until I did the editing. And exactly what he was saying. It's right there on the recording.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
So we captured something else that starts out sounding like a bark, but not quite. I think it's important to point out that while we were there, we didn't hear any dogs. Mm-hmm. So if we're anywhere recording on site, what we try to do for two reasons. If we hear something and we know what it is, we try to say, oh, that was an owl. Mm-hmm. That's a dog barking. Oh, that's a coyote.
Or, as much to calm yourself down.
It's really to mark the place on the tape.
Yeah.
So I know. So I when I'm go back and listen to the tape, I can go, oh, that's an owl. And then I can make the choice whether to present it to the audience or just, okay, we've got enough owl sounds. They don't need to hear that. Or if it's something we don't know what it was, we say, hey, what was that? Or I don't know what that was. Whatever it is, again, to mark the place on the tape so I know where to go back and listen for these things. So we would have noted out loud if there were dogs barking. Mm-hmm. We didn't hear any dogs barking this night. So this starts out sounding like it's a bark, but not quite. And then it kind of changes a little bit. The other thing Chad kept talking about hearing was, he said he kept hearing some kind of bird. And again, I didn't hear what he was talking about that night. I was listening. He's like, I don't know if it's a turkey. I don't know what it is. I keep hearing some kind of bird. Again, on the audio, I hear some kind of bird sound. Now, somebody did contact me and said there's a certain kind of bird it's rare, but it is in Maryland, and it could have been that bird. I don't know. I don't know my bird sounds well enough.
Well, you better know the oriole.
I don't. Okay, here's another kind of woofing sound we heard. Again, there were no dogs that we heard that night.
This is exactly why I don't accompany you on any of these trips.
This was a scary night. You would have been in the car with the doors locked.
I probably would have just text me when you're ready for me to come pick you up. I'll be waiting somewhere in a well-lit parking lot.
So here, this is other single bark. Again, didn't notice any dogs while we were there. So we heard this weird cry. It was just a quick burst off in the woods. As I said on the other episode, remember this weird cry because it kind of comes into play again. So we were at the, what I call the top part. It's actually south, but it's uphill. So okay. Is it the upper part or is it lower because it's south of the lower part? However you want to put it. We were at the graveyard, which is kind of on a hill. We came back around to the other side and came into the woods that way. So we're in this woods. We see this red eye shine. Now, there's not many things that even can have red eye shine. These were big, by the way, which eliminates things like rats and little critters that sometimes...
What's the biggest thing that can have red eye shine?
A bear.
Oh, that's not cool.
Depending on its diet, bears can have red, green, I think blue, yellow. It really depends on their diet. Their eye shine can change.
It depends on the diet?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting.
So is the red related to an iron thing? Or I don't... I need to know about this.
Yeah, you'll have to research it. I did that much research to talk about eye shine for the Bigfoot book, so I know that the best...
But not humans? They don't...
Humans don't have eye shine at all.
Okay.
Because we don't have a tapetum lucidum. We don't have that membrane in the back of our eyes that reflects light. Like deer, if you see a human's eyes in flash photography,
yeah,
that's actually the red blood vessels in your eyes
that you're seeing lighting illuminated.
Up. So, yeah, that's not a tapetum lucidum. So only a few things that can have red eye shine at all, and only big thing that I know of, at least in this area. Mm-hmm. There might be big animals, maybe tigers or something, I don't know. But in North America, in this specific part of North America, the only big thing that can have red eye shine is a bear.
Have you thought about devil dogs?
Could have been a devil dog, for sure. So we see this red eye shine.
Yeah,
and it was like... very disconcerting because I'm here, Chad moves down the trail towards it a little bit, kind of at an angle.
Purposefully? Towards it?
Yeah. He wants to try to figure out what it is. I had the eye shine in my headlamp, and then it's gone.
If something closes its eyes, wouldn't it do that?
Possibly. Chad says he can still see it, though, so I'm wondering if it turned its head mm-hmm. to look at him, because I couldn't see it anymore. But that's very worrisome when you see big eye shine in the woods, in the dark woods, mm-hmm. and now you don't see it. I wanted to keep an eye on this thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to know where it was. But Chad said he could still see it. In any case, Chad asked, so he had left something up at the cemetery. There seems to be a gifting area that someone established up there that had oyster shells and coins in it. We did not do that. We found that. So Chad leaves a stone up there as a gift. And this was a rock that Diane had felt was thrown at her mm-hmm. in that cemetery in Colombia mm-hmm. from the woods. So Chad leaves this and he says, I left you something up there. I would like something in return, please.
Oh, no, no, no.
This is exactly what I'm thinking. Like, don't do that.
This is the folkloric equivalent.
Yep. It's like breaking the rules. As soon as he says that, we hear this weird cry. Like, immediately afterwards, this weird cry comes from the woods. It was so creepy.
Did you capture that?
We did. So here's this. This is right after Chad asked for his gift in return.
I'll give you a gift.
So that happens, and then, as I said on the episode, I kind of was like a little bit jealous that Chad had this interaction.
Really?
Yes, I want to be the special guy that gets yelled at from Bigfoot too. In any case, we're standing there and I guess Chad had asked, give us a sign if you don't want us here, if you want us to leave or something like that. Mm. And it went dead quiet. Just dead quiet. And later on the way home, we were talking and he's like, you know what it felt like to me? It felt like it was trying to make up its mind. Like, that's why it went quiet. Mm-hmm. Like, it was trying to make up its mind whether it wanted to leave
or so curious.
Separate from him, I had the exact same feeling. That's totally the feeling I got, too, at that time. I'm like, it doesn't know. It doesn't know, you know, whatever that's worth. In any case, I said, we had the feeling that things had been thrown at us mm-hmm. all night. I said, in the direction of the eye shine that was no longer there and the cry we heard, I said, throw something at us. Do not hit us. Throw it near us. A second later, maybe 2 seconds, I don't know, something hits right beside me. Just loud as can be, just whack.
Can you hear that on the audio?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got that recorded too. We took that as time to go. That was enough.
Was this during, like, cicada mania?
No cicadas were crying that night. I went back a couple days later. You can hear it in the Gazoo's Woods Part 2. And it was, like, deafening loud.
Yeah. Weird because it's almost as if the cicadas respected the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah, we didn't get too many.
We didn't really get any, not the way people in Maryland did.
Something landed next to me. I didn't see what hit the ground. I honestly was way too concerned about keeping whatever that was in my headlamp to look for a stone or mm-hmm. an acorn or whatever could have hit the ground next to us. So I don't know what it was, but it very impressive. It's very, very impressive.
Do you ever record the sound of you and Chad peeing yourselves?
I've not done that yet. You know, I've talked to so many witnesses. I've heard witnesses like on Sasquatch Chronicles again and again, so scared that they peed themselves.
I've only been that scared, and that was from a human being.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't even realize it's happening. You're just like, oh, I guess it does happen as a fight or flight mechanism.
So it's a bonus. Going to have a little bonus tonight.
Okay.
Very short preview of our episode 300.
I know you've been working on this since basically episode 200.
Yeah, Chad and I have been working on this for over a year now. So this will be the episode 300 project. it's going to be called the Witch Cloud. It has to do with an area that Chad and I have been repeatedly investigating. It's got on-site audio. It's got witness interviews on location. Nobody that met us out there. These were people that we met while we were there who agreed to be interviewed. It's got our own experiences. It's got a lot of weirdness in this, and it's also going to be a book. So there'll be a book. Buy the book. You get the audio of the episode for free as a download. The episode audio is basically the audio book plus all this on-site stuff with it. That'll come with the book. That'll be episode 300. The only way to get it is to get the book. For patrons, we always say you get every episode. You will get this episode, but it's going to be, I don't know, 6 months, 8 months down the line. The idea was to raise money for the podcast. So episode 300, get the book, get the download with it. It will be a really cool set. You guys will see. Fully illustrated book, tons of research, plus all this audio, on-site audio. So we were at this location. We were interviewing two witnesses, and one of them was talking about being paced by something in the brush. And then he said he saw this black shadowy figure. He said it was 6 to 7 feet tall. These are ghost hunters. These are not Bigfoot people.
Mm-hmm.
These people are repeatedly describing things pacing them in the woods, things hitting the ground, things whacking trees, and these figures that are, the one guy said was wider than Chad and I together, 7 feet tall. This guy saw a 7 foot tall black thing cross the path while we're talking to him. After he says he heard something pace him in the brush, this guy was a ghost hunter. He said he's never coming back to this place again, this particular place we were. He said,
"See, you know, that's the smartest thing I've heard the whole night."
He said, "I don't know." I said, "Are you coming back to Gettysburg?" Because he'd been there before, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm going to keep coming back to Gettysburg." He's like, "I don't know about this place though." So
now, were these people that had their own audio equipment? Were they recording any of this?
These were ghost hunters. They have all kinds of ghost boxes and ghost apps on their phone, all kinds of equipment, all kinds of crazy laser grids that if anything breaks the laser grid, it sets off an alarm and all this stuff.
What?
They set up all kinds of, you should see the equipment these ghost hunters have. It's pretty great.
With 50,000 dead people in like a 3-day period of time, there should be a decent amount of people walking through that grid.
Well, the interesting thing about this project is it's given me the opportunity to question exactly what ghosts are in the same way with where the footprints end. I got to question exactly what Bigfoot is, because a lot of what people are experiencing in these locations really don't seem to act like the spirits of dead people, nor look like them. So that's the...
They weren't Victorian. Well, I would like to see a Victorian Bigfoot. Could you draw me like a dandy Victorian Bigfoot?
I could.
But I won't. Come on. Can't we make dandy Bigfoot?
So in any case, we're talking to these ghosts. We're interviewing these ghost hunters. During the interview, after he sees this thing cross the path, he says, "Well, now I hear something growling."
But you're right there.
I'm right there. When I edited the audio, sure enough, underneath us talking, you can hear something growling while we're talking. This was not my stomach. I'll not hear it. Don't tell me it was my stomach. This was something else. I'm going to go ahead and play this. This again, the witness said he heard it while we were interviewing him. So we were talking. If my stomach's loud enough that you could hear it over Chad and this guy talking.
And it's mimicking dogs.
So here's this growl we recorded there. This is just one of tons of audio. That'll be part of episode 300.
Control right. When they're really not.
Yeah.
Control right. When they're really not.
Yeah.
Control right. When they're really not.
Yeah. Okay, and here is a whispery EVP that we captured on site as well. I'll just go ahead and play that. Like I said, there's tons more of this audio. That's going to be part of The Witch Cloud. It takes the form of a book with accompanying audio, on-site audio, interviews. There's owls, there's bangs, there's knocks, there's cries, there's EVPs, there's ghost box sessions. It's all there. I am excited about this project, and I'm hoping everybody gets it because I really think it's something special. All right, that's it for our Ghosts of Audio Past. And got two Ghosts of Audio Future there, the 300 preview. Days to the perfect puppy. I should have done the math to figure out when episode 300 is coming out and see.
To see if it'll, like, by that time you could have had...
You could have a perfect puppy. I'm not sure.
At this point, you could have a perfect puppy by just about Halloween.
If you start now...
I mean, if your puppy's a little bit more exceptional than the average puppy and you can do it in 88 days.
Yeah, maybe you could have a perfect puppy by Halloween, certainly by Thanksgiving.
Yeah. If your puppy's a little behind, Christmas maybe.
90 days to the perfect puppy. You can find them at sithappens.us. Mm-hmm. Look for the 90 days to the perfect puppy link. Mm-hmm. They have a relationship-based approach to training that helps you and your puppy become perfect for each other. They have online sources, mm-hmm. such as video lesson, a secret Facebook group. I'm actually a member of this group, Sans Puppy. Mm-hmm. Got secret access.
You can watch other people's puppies.
Well, actually, someone recently requested help with an issue, and then a bunch of people chimed in with, like, how helpful they could help them, including Tina. So you get help from other puppy owners, and you get help from long-term trainers. You know, I think Tina's been doing dog training forever, maybe. Excellent group. It's an excellent program. Of course, you can get one-on-one options as well. But 90 days to the perfect puppy help you understand how your dog thinks, which is not how you think.
No.
Puppy might use an abacus where you use a calculator. And apply proactive training methods so you and your puppy can become perfect for each other. It's not about making the puppy perfect. It's about helping you understand each other. You become perfect for each other. Again, you can find them at sithappens.us. Look for the 90 days to the perfect puppy link at the top of the page.
This will be good for all those Halloween puppies people get. Can you imagine going to a house and they give you a puppy? Like, you hold out your, like, a little, one of those little... a
pumpkin.
The plastic pumpkin, and they put a puppy in it.
I want to go to that house. All right, so next, let's talk with Kelly and hear her story about this blue light in the Pine Barrens. Interesting thing about Kelly, she's a scientist. She's pretty skeptical about some of the stuff we talk about, but she absolutely could not explain this blue light. And she talked to her other friends, as you'll hear, who are in the science, and asked them, "Have any explanation for this?" So it's, you know, I think we have plenty of truly unexplained stuff, but here's a scientist presenting something that she feels is truly unexplainable, whatever it is. So let's talk with Kelly and hear her story. Tonight we're talking with Kelly, who has a story from the Pine Barrens in New Jersey to share with us. How are you doing tonight, Kelly?
Good, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. As much as you're comfortable, can you tell us, we know the general location is the Pine Barrens, but if you can get a little more specific, if you're comfortable doing so, that'd be great.
Yeah. So it's actually, it's in the Manahawkin Bottomland Hardwood Forest down in southern New Jersey, which is, it's like a 1,600-acre nature preserve. We call it the Bridge to Nowhere because it starts at the end of Stafford Road and then just it ends. So part of the bridge, when I was there, you could still walk out on it. Now you can't even. It's just the end of the road. And then the middle part of the bridge you can see coming up out of the water, and the other end of it is all taken in by swamp.
So what year did this experience happen?
Wow, it was a long time ago. 2002, maybe?
And somewhere around there. Why were you out there in the Pine Barrens? I know it can be a pretty lonesome place.
Yeah, a friend of mine was having some issues with a girlfriend, and he just wanted to chat, so we thought we would take a drive out there. And it's quiet. There's nothing going on. There are no lights. It was pretty well lit by the moon, I think, that evening. But it's just middle of nowhere.
I've never been. I've heard, you know, plenty of stories about the Pine Barrens. But I think people have this idea of, you know, New Jersey just being one big suburb of New York City, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's such a common misconception. I mean, we're the Garden State for a reason. We produce a lot of vegetables and fruits for the country. And there are just miles and miles of forest. Pine Barrens is all to the south, and there are mountains to the north. I mean, they're small compared to other parts of the country, but it's really a very beautiful state. I think people think of, like you said, the cities near New York City, like Elizabeth and Newark, to be what New Jersey is, but It's not. That's a very small part of the state.
So tell us what you saw and tell us what happened.
Yeah, so we're standing there on this bridge, and my buddy's talking to me, and I see at the end of the bridge, where it's now just swampland and tall grass and marsh, this blue flashing lights from about maybe 6 feet away from us. It's a bright blue. Probably the whole diameter of the light was maybe about a quarter or half dollar size. And it was flashing like a firefly, except in a pattern. Fireflies don't make patterns like this. It would flash, say, to the left, and then for about a second and a half, and then above, and then down to the right, almost in a triangular pattern. And it was a very vivid blue. Insects don't make a blue like this, certainly not in New Jersey. Generally, insect light is yellow or white, maybe a light blue tinge on the whiter colors. All this light emanation comes from an enzyme called the luciferase, and it creates a very consistent type of light. This was not that. And I was really excited. I thought, oh, what is this thing? You know, and my friend was nervous. And he's like, I don't like the way this looks. And I wanted to go investigate. But then it started moving towards us. And that's not a natural way insects usually move. They're not mosquitoes. You know, fireflies aren't interested in people, if that's what we thought it could be. It was too big, much too large to be a light-producing insect living in our part of the world, and moved what felt like with purpose. You know, not to put too much of a point on that. So it's moving towards us, and it keeps flashing in this sort of triangular pattern with this very vivid blue. And then I started to feel a little queasy. Like, okay, something is wrong. This is not right. My friend is almost panicking. And at this point, he's grabbing my arm, and he said, we should leave. I think we should really get out of here. And it's coming towards us kind of quickly, and still with this triangular 1.5 second flash. Eventually we get to the car and we got out of there. I think the whole thing took place maybe 6 or 7 minutes from when I first noticed it in the tall reeds until it made it to the about center part of where we were standing on the bridge.
So when you say it was triangular, did it light up like at the three points of the triangle?
Yep.
Again and again?
Yes. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it before. Usually lightning bugs, and I'm sorry if I'm using the lightning bug analogy too frequently, but it's what most people assume that we saw. They tend to stay in one spot and they flash a couple times, and then they move and they flash a couple times. They don't really do, from what I've seen at least, this elaborate pattern.
I've never seen them make a discernible pattern, for sure. Mm-mm. Like you said, it'll be a flash, and then they'll have moved however many feet, and then they'll flash again.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's usually females. Females stay low in the grass, and they make this distinct pattern to bring the males. But this was, it was moving, and it was too tall. It was up high at the top of the grass.
Right. And when you say pattern in fireflies, that's the on-off pattern, not a shape pattern they make.
Correct.
It's a light on-off pattern, so that, you know, two quicks and a long or something like that. The different firefly breeds have different...
It depends on the species.
Yeah. Now, I think down in North Carolina, there's a area where you can go see blue fireflies.
Yes. They're only found there, but they're a white blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen pictures. They're quite beautiful.
Yeah.
But I'm just bringing it up because, you know, someone will certainly say, well, there are blue fireflies.
Yeah, just in this one spot. And the females there stay very low to the ground. So they wouldn't be up high in that grass like that. And again, like you said, that pattern, that triangular pattern is so strange.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, did you talk with your friend about it afterwards?
I did. I talked to him the next day and said, did we really see something last night? And he said yes, and he was very uncomfortable about it. And we just kind of compared notes. This is what I saw. And we agreed. Neither of us got a look at what organism was making the light. It was, we could really just see the light. And then maybe 10 years later, we were at a barbecue together. I had told my husband the story a million times, and I went over to my friend and I said, can you tell him what we saw on the bridge? And it was like we never left, you know what I mean? It was so vivid, and he told the same story, and even 10 years later, just really left an impression.
So you agreed on size, shape, color?
Yep, yeah, oh yeah.
I had to check because of my experience at Site 7, the one time where I'm 90% sure John and I were looking at the same light he was describing as a ping pong ball, and that's not what I was seeing. So,
it is amazing how that seems to happen in certain places.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. So, as a scientist, do you have any thoughts on what it could have been?
No. I've spent many years thinking about this, thinking about the size and the color and that pattern. And I've asked colleagues, I've asked entomologists, I've asked jellyfish experts, you know, folks who really specialize in bioluminescence. And they all said, no, that pattern doesn't make sense. I have never heard of anything that makes blue that bright, especially not here. There are glowworms, like cave glowworms that are larvae, and they're blue, but they don't flash, and they're not here, you know. I asked a friend of mine who's a jellyfish biologist, and he made a crack, oh, I think you saw a will-o'-the-wisp. which seems to be the most, I suppose, likely paranormal explanation.
Yeah, whatever that means, I think, you know, will-o'-the-wisp is a sort of a catch-all for mystery lights, for sure, but...
Definitely.
Well, that's so interesting, though. I would love to talk to these experts on bioluminescence about glowing eyes.
Oh, glowing eyes are due to the tapetum lucidum in the back of the eyeball. It's a reflective sheet of cells in the back of the eye.
I've written on the tapetum lucidum. I'm talking about eye glow, not eye shine. That's reflective.
Oh, glow.
When people report that there was no, the light source was coming from the eyes. Which makes no sense to me, biologically speaking.
Biologically, that doesn't exist. That's fascinating, though.
Yeah, I've told people, like, as regards to, you know, Bigfoot, it comes up a lot, and I said, like, there's no animal on Earth that has glowing eyes, but they're all over folklore. You can read folklore going back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, where people talk about different hairy, you know, goblins and elves.
Oh, thousands of years, probably, right, for certain cultures.
You name it with glowing eyes, but as far as natural creatures, it just doesn't seem to happen.
It would have to be some kind of bioluminescence, either created by, it's all luciferase, I'm pretty sure. So it's just this one enzyme. Yeah. Why that would be in your eye doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about night vision, you'd think that would kill your night vision.
Yeah, you want it to be red.
Yeah.
If anything.
Yeah. Kelly, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to share. Thanks for having me.
All right, next, we're going to go to Jonathan with his story about these weird buzzing vocals when he was out looking for Bigfoot. It's pretty interesting.
Isn't there, like, sometimes a buzzing noise that just kind of is a portent of just supernatural or...
Oh, yeah. The buzzing noises come with UFO experiences. They come with NDEs. They come with psychedelic experiences. That's why it's really important, I think, to note that these buzzing vocals are also heard around Bigfoot experiences.
Tonight we're talking with Jonathan, who has what sounds like a really, really interesting, I don't know if we want to call it a Bigfoot encounter, but sounds you heard while out kind of looking for Sasquatch. Is that more accurate?
I would say so. Yes. So I'm a longtime listener of Sasquatch Chronicles, and there was a guy on there named Robert. He was on episode 40, and he had described an incident or an encounter that he had down towards Colorado Springs, and he and his son were camping. This guy's basically like a survivor man type, and it was middle of winter. This is like 11,000 feet elevation, and all of a sudden something just comes into their camp and starts screaming, you know, the typical woman being murdered kind of thing. Right. And so he ends up researching that area thinking, you know, his son was the one who was like, Dad, maybe it's a Bigfoot. The guy totally wasn't in the subject at the time. And so he ends up researching that area. He could have his own show of his own on all of the encounters that he's had there. But I reached out to him because I got tired of just reading about the subject of Bigfoot. And he was kind enough to take me to his spot. And the first time I was there, I heard a knock. You know, a lot of people would be very excited with that, but I was expecting much more. But it was definitely a knock. And like, it's one thing to sit there and wish for it, but when you're out there in the middle of the dark at 11,000 feet, you know, you kind of wish you don't get the activity.
Oh my goodness, don't I know that. When I talked about that at Pandemonium, just hearing the being woken up by those knocks and just sitting there going, just my heart sank to my stomach and just like, oh, this is real.
It's one thing to, you know, be in your bed and listening to podcasts such as yours. And it's another thing to be in the middle of nowhere in the middle of the night and, mm-hmm. and have that, oh no, this is real.
Yeah, this is happening.
But so we went, that was the first trip. On the next trip we went, there were several of us and there was a definite knock. Robert and this other guy went up behind me. We were sitting around a fire ring. They went up this side of the canyon and they knocked. And immediately after that, there was another knock. I mean, it was unbelievable how fast it was. And so when they came down, you know, I guess for lack of a better term to kind of test them, I'm like, did you guys break up and one knocked over here and another one of you knocked over there? And they said, no. So
they knocked and then there was an answer.
Absolutely. I mean, immediately, Timothy. I mean, very, very loud. Not, oh, well, maybe that was a knock. I mean, it was Barry Bonds with a Louisville Slugger against a tree. It was wow. Very loud and it sounded very close. So that was one of three interesting things that happened on this trip. The second thing that happened that I reached out to you about was I was sitting around the campfire with Robert and off in the trees in the distance, I hear what sounds kind of like voices. And it wasn't, you know, the typical samurai chatter that you hear so many people talk about, but it sounded like almost like whispering or like bees humming, like, and I looked at Robert and he looked at me and our eyes got big as saucers. And so the fact that he looked at me at the same time really confirmed for me that I did in fact hear what I just heard.
Right.
And I'm not someone who, you know, immediately jumps to Bigfoot. I'm like, you know, was that other campers? Was that someone else? But if in order for that to have been a human being in that area, they would have had to have used headlamps or it would have been extremely dangerous. And mm-hmm. I did not see any lights. I didn't see any headlamps. And so that was really, really odd. It didn't sound like anything in nature that I had ever heard. I'm an avid hiker, backpacker. I had never heard anything like that. The third odd thing that happened was as we were leaving, we're in our, you know, in our trucks, we're headed out, and all of a sudden Robert goes, "Those are tracks." And this is on a road that's very steep on either, well, on one side. And there were footprints. I sent you the photo. I don't know if you've had a chance to
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah.
It's not a great photo. I'm not a great photographer, but there were definite tracks going up the side of that road. It's a fire road. And I don't know if you can really get a sense for how steep that is or, you know, kind of how there's kind of a shoe in the mm-hmm. image, mm-hmm. kind of give you some sense of scale, but I honestly don't see how a human being could go up the side of that without like leaning forward, using their hands to get up.
Right.
And it was nothing. It was loose soil. So it wasn't like toes and, you know, dermal ridges and all that. But they were pretty big tracks. And that was very steep. And it didn't look like whatever it went up the side of that road didn't look like it lost stride. Mm-hmm. And so none of those things, you know, in and of themselves is particularly remarkable. But all three of those things added up, combined with the history that Robert had there. I mean, he had been up there 50 times, you know, researching, and he has all kinds of stories. So just given the context of Robert's, you know, experiences there, and then those three very odd things happening, I can't really come to any other conclusion other than it was more than likely Bigfoot activity.
Yeah.
And recently I was at the Sasquatch Outpost. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's in Bailey, Colorado.
I'm not.
Jim Myers has a Bigfoot store there. He has a museum there. He's really nice. And I was chatting with him and I told him, you know, what I had just told you, and I told him about Robert's experiences. And he said, yeah, I had a guy come in here the other day off the same road who viewed a family of them through a rifle scope. I'm wow. Like, wow. So, and it is in a county that, according to the BFRO, does have a lot of sightings and encounters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here I am years later speaking with Jim Myers, and he brought up the name of the road and mentioned his customer's experience there. So that just even, you know, gave more credibility to what I experienced.
Yeah. Now this, I'm curious about this buzzing sound. You said it sounded like, was it like human speech, but you couldn't make it out. Is that?
It sounded like, I guess it sounded like whispering in the distance, but to me, it sounded like,
right.
I mean, just, I don't know if I want to use the word paranormal, but it just didn't sound to me like human voices. Mm-hmm. And I actually reached out to Robert today, and I was like, you know, I just wanted to get his impression of it. I hadn't spoken with him in a long time, but I texted him, and he says, and I'm just going to read his text. He says he remembers that time he heard the jabber far off, which almost sounds like a radio in the distance. Hmm. He says, I have heard the jabber close, and it sounds like grown men having a conversation, but you can't make out the words. I think a radio off in the distance, I could see where someone would think that. But to me, I just keep coming back to this. It's just very odd.
Yeah.
Kind of like human voices, but kind of not. Almost like the, you know, like you hear a beehive and it's that kind of humming sound, and it kind of rose in intensity and then kind of fell. It was like this sense of uniformity about it, just rise and fall, if that makes sense at all.
Yeah. Yeah. About how long did you hear it?
I would say, I mean, it was very short, 3 seconds, 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then we just looked at each other. We didn't do anything. And our eyes just got really big. Like, do you hear that?
Right.
But you hear so much about the samurai chatter, and it wasn't anything like Ron Moorhead, Sierra Sounds or anything like that. But that's what makes it so odd to me. So when I was reading in your book about, you know, the buzzing or humming sounds, I was like, aha, that's more closely describes what I heard than anything else I've come across.
Yeah, that's so, well, okay, you know, I think Josh would push back and say, you know, no Bigfoot was seen, so can't call it a Bigfoot encounter. Right. But shorthand, let's call this a Bigfoot encounter, because, you know, we'll just use that as shorthand and keep in the back of our mind that, okay, it could have been something else, but other Bigfoot encounters were had there, and you were out there looking for Bigfoot, and this happened.
Sure.
The types of vocalizations attributed to Bigfoot are really super interesting, but they're all over the map, from straight up human, you know, voices, whether they're
imitative or whether they understand what they're saying, is that's a whole other thing. To, like you said, the so-called samurai chatter, to, you know, screams and howls and chirps and whistles and imitating animals and so forth. You know, I'm almost not surprised when someone hears any sound out there. But these buzzing sounds are reported with some frequency. Again, across the paranormal, that's the other thing. You know, people will hear buzzing sounds with UFOs. They'll hear buzzing sounds with sometimes with ghost encounters and so forth. But super interesting. Like, how far between the hearing the wood knocks and hearing that sound do you think? How much time?
I would say that 45 minutes, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an hour. I mean, maybe less than that. It's been a while.
Sure.
But not an extremely long amount of time at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area where there's a, you know, supposedly, you know, ghost encounters or paranormal activity. But, you know, sometimes maybe those things can be, people attribute that to paranormal activity when in fact it may be Bigfoot.
Yeah. I mean, I've had Dave, who's been on the show before, and I quote him in a little book I'm writing right now. You know, people talk about, you know, Josh, for instance, will say, you know, or Soraya will say, perhaps poltergeist activity accounts for Bigfoot. And Dave turns that on its head, says, well, maybe Bigfoot activity accounts for poltergeist.
Which is, it's only fair.
Yeah, it's a very interesting way to think about it. So
it sure is.
Have you visited this area more?
We may have gone back for a day hike after that, but I haven't been back. I have a buddy who went there and went camping with some friends. He wasn't, you know, squatching per se, but he did tell me a story about how he was there with a friend of his who was a big guy, you know, manly man kind of guy. And they were speaking after they woke up the next morning and said, man, there was somebody going through our camp last night. I was scared to death. And my buddy, knowing the history of that area, said, I don't think that was people. And I can't recall if he led on as to what he was thinking, it was Sasquatch behavior or not, but he's had some interesting encounters up there, or experiences rather, I should say. But I haven't been back in a while. Robert's moved out of state, but I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
To go back and see if there's, you know, still, you know, any activity up there.
I hear a number of stories about people hearing people go through their camp at night, hearing something go through their camp that's not a bear, you know, something that they're certain is walking on two legs.
Right.
These are some brave people if they're doing that. I would I would not walk up on somebody's camp. You don't know if they're armed. You don't know how they're going to react. I think about, again, not to keep bringing up, but our night in Pandemonium, whatever came into our camp, if that was a person, they were pretty brave, because we were not going to be kind if we woke up and found a person in our camp.
Absolutely. And this is an area where people, you know, pull off the side of the road and just, you know, target practice and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in that area, you know, people are more than likely armed. You know, in Colorado, people backpacking, camping, you see a tent. Yeah, absolutely. If you're going through someone's camp, you're taking your life into your hands for sure.
Yeah, just as just general state, I would not recommend people go into other people's campsite at night.
Right, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, that's it for that area and for that evening. It was just, you know, again, you know, I'm just not the kind of person who sits back and, you know, interprets every little thing that happens as Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
But those three things all on one trip, just, it adds up.
Yeah.
And when I read, you know, in your book about those sounds, it really struck a chord with me. So I just thought I'd reach out to you.
Oh, absolutely. Jonathan, thank you for sharing your stories.
Well, thank you, Timothy. It's nice to meet you.
What a curiosity we have this week.
Are you selling your socks to old men?
They're buying. This is from 1932, Dr. Kilmer's Swamp Root Almanac. I prefer the Swamp Root Dream Book. What a great name.
Yeah, that is a good name.
I've collected these
for some time. So what this is, it's an almanac, but it also has dream interpretation in the back.
And it's going to sell you some valuable remedies for what ails you.
Yes. This is one for piles and hemorrhoids. Dr. Kilmer's UNO ointment. It's got...
He actually has swamp root.
Swamp root, a diuretic to the kidneys. Did we used to have a box of that? The actual swamp root box?
We have wizard oil. But it's currently for sale.
Look at that big building he had. This was not any fly-by-night operation. He had a huge building.
He could just say he had that building. No one's going to check up on it.
This almanac was sold originally in McKinney's Pharmacy in Tawnytown. That's a place in Maryland. Looks like Taney Town, but it's pronounced Tawny Town. So I heard somebody on Conspiranormal talking about these weird little magical almanacs and things. And I thought, well, yeah, I have some of those. So it's got, when to plant crops. It's got history of modern important events. It's got, of course, tons of health information because he's trying to sell you different health ointments. Like I said, it's got dream interpretation. What the stars foretell from your birthday.
Oh, can you read mine?
Yes, let's see. Okay. So July 21st through August 22nd, you are popular and affectionate. Understand people very well and are quite idealistic. You are rather unreasonable at times. This is true. However, and perhaps do not work as hard and as consistently as you should.
Ding, ding, ding.
You should be a little more practical and a little less idealistic. And become somewhat more active in your endeavors.
Oh, let me read yours. Okay.
Okay. Read what it says. Don't be mean.
Oh, why do you get this? You are intelligent, steady, and have the quality of recovering mental stability after a misfortune. Your tendency, however, is to waste part of your abilities, to imagine unfavorable conditions which do not really exist, and to annoy your friends and acquaintances occasionally with curiosity as to their personal affairs. You should study your work and really think more and put your mind to bigger things than you've done in the past. I love how it just kind of berates you at the same time.
Yeah, it like pats you on the back with one hand and smacks you across the face with the other.
You might get more use from the ad for piles.
I'm trying to find the dream interpretation. Oh, yeah. So here's the dream interpretation thing. So
what was your most recent dream about?
I was attacked by men in the basement who were the guys from Home Alone. I don't know if they have Home Alone attack.
Okay, I'm going to tell you my most recent one that I remembered. Pablo Picasso was asking me to give him sexual favors.
Wow.
I don't even like Picasso.
I'm going to see if there's no artist in here. So let's see if there's a painter.
Yeah.
No, there's a panther, if you dreamed of a panther.
No. What do they say about teeth? Let's just go with like a classic dream interpretation.
So teeth. An unfortunate dream. If the teeth are loose, it foretells sickness. To lose a tooth signifies the loss of a friend. To lose all the teeth at once foretells disaster. It's got dream interpretation and cool little black and white illustrations.
It'll help get you through the depression. It's 1931.
A certificate of purity in the front. It's Dr. Kilmer's Swamp Root Almanac. I prefer to call it the Swamp Root Dream Book because it's a much cooler name for it.
Yeah, it has the zodiac signs on the front cover, but they're sort of adapted for a quasi-Native American sort of motif.
Yeah. One page has part of it clipped out. For what reason, I don't know. Just so you know, I'll put a picture of that in the Etsy listing.
Oh, here's an article on the danger period of life, middle age.
You're telling me. There's nothing safe about it.
Very few people drink enough water, and we eat too much meat and other foods that overwork the kidneys in the process of elimination.
No, but I bet he's got something to help us with that.
For some reason, I bet something with about a 99% alcohol content is going to be great for your kidneys.
So this is our curiosity of the week. We'll put an image of this in the show notes. If you click on that, it'll take you to our Etsy shop, where you can buy this in the Curiosity of the Week section. There are no other Curiosities of the Week because they have all sold so far. You can check out this super cool Swamp Root Dream Book. I collected those. I don't know how many more of those I have. I know I have more somewhere.
Yeah, we've been trying to go through things.
This is from 1932. I definitely have more.
We have some older ones.
Yeah, I definitely have more stuff like this too that I'll dig out and present. I love old ephemera like this though. I love looking through it. While you're on Etsy, as I mentioned before, I've got those new prints. You can check them out. And on my books and everything else we have at Etsy, a lot of new New old photographs, Allison's added. New listings of old photographs. Our shop name is Lost Grave, one word. If you type in Strange Familiars, our stuff will come up. Also on Etsy, Chad's shop, Ruck Rabbit Outdoors, and our friends at Karmic Garden with their awesome soaps and other fine smelly things. Are you quite done reading the dream book? I lost my co-host.
No, sorry.
He's fascinated by the Swamp Root dream book.
Okay, wait, where am I? Do I have to pay any attention anymore?
I think we're done for the week. Obviously, you've listened to this. We released this episode early to give me time to prepare for Cryptid Bash. Hope to see you in Morgantown, West Virginia. Chad and I will be there Saturday, signing books, signing artwork, selling artwork, selling books. Come say hi. We'll be back next week with another episode of Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, music, books, art, podcasts, and more. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more or purchase music by Stone Breath, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. Strange Familiars is on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on Facebook, you can join the Strange Familiars Gathering group. We talk about all things paranormal and spooky and fun and you name it. If you're on Instagram, you can find us. We're at Strange Familiars. Follow us, like our posts. And if you're on the web looking for us, we are at www.strangefamiliars.com.
Sing. as we wait for daylight.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.